Good afternoon. My name is Amanda Agosti. I'm the Chief Program Officer for the City Club of Chicago, and welcome. On behalf of the Board of Governors, we have our Chair, Jackie Robinson Ivey, and Jose Sanchez, a board member. So several months ago, we had the opportunity to collaborate and partner with the Joyce Foundation and WTTW Firsthand Initiative and WTT News. I think I forgot a W there, WTTW News, to put together a three-part series examining gun violence in Chicago. We started in the Holman Square Community Center with members of the community and members of the civic community to examine the ecosystem of public safety in Chicago. A few months later, just last month, we examined the illegal flow of guns into our city with Director Brendan Kelly from the Illinois State Police and Special Agent Amon from ATF. Today, with a partnership with Nina Vinnick and Project Unloaded and her team, we're going to be talking about our future, teens, social media, and gun violence, how we're going to move forward to ensure that this next generation is equipped to be the leaders we need them to be. I want to say a very, very special thank you to the Joyce Foundation, especially Tim Daly, for trusting City Club with this. You know, City Club, it is your platform. So there are many advocates and leaders. If you have ideas about reducing gun violence or anything like that, we want to hear from you. We put together programming. We want to make sure it reflects what our membership and the community needs to hear. So if you have ideas, don't hesitate to reach out. We always love to have ideas. And our events would not be possible without City Club members. If you're not a City Club member, it's never too late to join. But we are open to all. And I want to thank again the Joyce Foundation and Project Unloaded. And a very, very special thank you to Lori Glenn and her team at Think Inc. You Lori has been a great collaborator with the City Club on issues surrounding community policing and reducing gun violence. So, Lori, thank you for always coming to City Club and pushing us to make sure we have really great programming. The best part of City Club, I think, is the people in the room. And we are joined by community leaders, civic leaders, business leaders, a couple I'd like to acknowledge. Chicago Inspector General, Deborah Witzberg. Amy Eshelman, our city's former First Lady. And Alderman Mike Rodriguez, thank you. And I personally love when we're able to get people in the room that are impacted by the issues we're talking about and are leaders in their own right. So I just want to acknowledge a few youth mentors from COCO. We also have some students from the Alternative School Network. Welcome to City Club. Right there. We hope you'll come back anytime. And we also have a few students from the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago. So now for the main event. I am going to briefly introduce Nina Vinnick with Project Unloaded, and then our moderator today, Joanna Hernandez from WTTW, will lead the conversation. If you have questions or blue question cards on your table, fill them out, and City Club staff will grab them. Nina, you have devoted much of your career to eradicating gun violence, and you are the founder of Project Unloaded, and we look forward to hearing what your group is working on and how we as a community can come together to support our teens and eradicate gun violence for all. So without further ado, Nina, come on up.
Good afternoon. thank you, Amanda. Thank you to the City Club. Thank you to my good friends at the Joyce Foundation for your partnership on this event. Thank you to Joanna Hernandez and the team from WTTW, to our wonderful panelists, who you'll hear from in a moment. And to all of you, thank you for being here today. I'm Nina Vinnick. I'm the founder and president of Project Unloaded. My job today is to set the table for what you're going to be hearing about from our panelists. So let's get to it. These are familiar headlines. In Chicago, young people, guns, and social media are all part of the story of violence in our city. Teens make up over half of the victims of the city's mass shootings. The average age of a Black or Latino shooting witness in Chicago is just 14. And there's also been a lot of debate about social media and the role of social media, including how it might impact the mental health of young people. Whatever you may think about social media, I think we can all agree that social media isn't going anywhere. So the question for us today is, what would it look like to flip the script and leverage the power of social media to change the story on gun violence in Chicago and beyond? Project Unloaded is the only organization that's dedicated exclusively to using youth-powered narrative and culture change to address the root causes of gun violence. Our theory of change is to equip and empower teens to recognize the risks of using guns and to use their social media platforms to encourage their peers to decide against gun use. So here's how we're working to change the narrative when it comes to guns. Everything we do starts with research. We want to make sure we're learning directly from the young people who we're trying to reach. We use that research to develop campaigns and community programs that spread the facts about gun violence and why guns make us less safe. We refine and improve our messages based on real-time feedback from teens directly. And then we reinforce those messages and those facts by reaching teens over time, all with the goal of inspiring a generation of young people to confidently decide against having and using guns. So why is it so important to reach teens with the facts about gun violence and the risks of using guns? Because they don't know. Teens, like older Americans, have largely bought into the myth that having a gun will make them safer. And that's a dramatic shift over the last 25 years. In reality, as we all know, homes with guns are less safe, and communities with more guns have more gun violence, not less. The teen and young adult years are the time when people are making up their minds when it comes to gun use. We know that it's really hard to change the views of adults, but teens are different. They're worried about gun violence. They've seen it firsthand all their lives, and they want to learn more. That's our opportunity. At Project Unloaded, we see Snapchat and TikTok and Instagram as more than just entertainment. Content on these platforms is influencing how young people see the world, including how they think about guns. Teens are also crediting online platforms with finding community and helping them connect with others. So what we do is empower young people to bring their social media skills and their cultural savvy to bear with a new purpose, to share the message with their peers that teens are safer unarmed. Our research also included a deep dive with teens in the communities that are hardest hit by gun violence, including here in Chicago, published in 2023 in this report. We learned in that research that most teens have little or no understanding of the risks and responsibilities that come with having a gun. Nearly half of Black and Latino teens told us that they believe that having a gun will make them safer. But we also learned that there's reason to be hopeful. After seeing the facts about the risks of using guns, teens were more likely to believe that guns would make them less safe, and they were less likely to say that they would own or have a gun in the future. Our signature campaign is called SNUG. That's Safer Not Using Guns. SNUG offers a positive alternative to content online that so often glorifies gun culture. With SNUG, we're offering an alternative message that provides teens with the facts about guns and gun violence and encourages them to make up their own minds once they have those facts. SNUG features everyday teens and Gen Z content creators, and it's already reached more than 3.5 million teens across 11 cities just this year alone. This year, we also unveiled our latest campaign, which is designed to reach teens in the communities that are disproportionately impacted by gun violence. The campaign is called Guns Change the Story. Using zip code targeting, we're reaching teens in 5 cities, including Chicago, with a campaign that uses compelling video and narrative storytelling to challenge teens to consider how everyday moments can change when a gun is present. So far, we've reached almost 200,000 Chicago teens with the campaign, including with personalized content created by real Chicago teens as part of our community partner programs. Because social media is only one path for communicating with young people, we're also reaching teens offline through our community partnerships. Our after-school and summer programming fuses the fundamentals of social media marketing with the data on gun violence and the risks of gun use, working alongside partners like After School Matters, Chicago Public Schools, and Choose to Change. Program participants are guided on how to communicate the facts about gun risks through their own social media to inform and empower their peers to move away from wanting guns. We partner with local artists and with the business community, including our terrific partners at the creative agency Havas, to train young people on how to build their own social marketing campaigns to curb gun violence. And they presented those ideas at events in front of their peers and local leaders and influencers. So there is a model for what we do at Project Unloaded, and that model is cigarette smoking. The Truth Initiative helped turn smoking from cool to uncool in the span of a generation. And they did that by empowering young people with the facts. From our research, we know that teens worry about gun violence and they worry about their personal safety. And in Chicago, we know that when they're empowered with the tools to tell a different story about guns, young people can channel their fear and frustration into positive change in their communities. I'm excited for you to hear from the panel to learn more about what this looks like in practice and how you can help get involved. So with that, I'll invite Joanna Hernandez from WTTW and our panelists to take the stage. Thank you.
There we go. Good afternoon. How was lunch?
Good.
Those cookies look good too. Did you say yes? They were good. It's so nice to be here today, and it's really nice to see these two groups of young people as well, because you guys belong here. It was nice to see you here. So I want to start by introducing the panelists. We have Dr. Selwyn Rogers, founding director of the University of Chicago Medicine Trauma Center and executive vice president of community health engagement at the University of Chicago. Then we have Jadeen Chow, chief of safety and security at Chicago Public Schools. Then we have Olivia Brown, program manager at Project Unloaded. And then we have Leah McCain, Project Unloaded youth council member and a Whitney Young Magnet High School student and After School Matters program alum. Awesome. Leah, you are the youngest panelist in your sophomore year of high school. You mentioned before that it's easier to get a gun than to rent in Chicago. Why has it become so important to you to speak out about reducing gun violence among young people like yourself?
Can you hear me? Wait, is this on? Okay.
I think so.
I think that it's really important, especially for me, because I see like the damage that guns do in communities in Chicago. And I think that, you know, you have to be part of the change. Like, if you want to see change, you can't just wait for other people, you know, to change things. You know, you have to take that step. So it was important for me to try to get involved.
And you've also talked about an experience, right, that you saw someone getting shot outside of your home. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Yeah, so I was at my neighbor's house, and we heard, like, gunshots. And, like, that was my first time. And I was like, what's going on? And, like, we, like, ducked down. And but we were in, like, the safety of, like, a home and stuff. But, like, it was still, like, very confusing, you know. And, like, we just heard, like, oh, my gosh, like, he shot. Like, and, like, we saw people running and stuff. And, like, we called 911. And that was, like, the first time I'd ever called 911 before. And I was just so scared. And I just was, like, praying for the family and stuff and the victims, because, like, you know, that could be you, that could be anyone, you know. I didn't know who it was at the time, but yeah, that was my, like, first experience with gun violence.
Do you feel like that moment really impacted the way you thought about things?
100%. It, like, made me more, I guess, like, kind of opened my eyes that it's, like, really, like, that easy, like, and this can happen in my neighborhood, you know. So yes,
thank you. Olivia, you are the program manager for Project Unloaded. What has it been like for you to work with students like Leah?
It's been amazing. I think I always say that I have the most fun job at Project Unloaded because I get to work with students like Leah, who, through unfortunate circumstances sometimes, are still hopeful and they still want to make a change and they still see value in doing something, even if it's a small something in their community. So it has been really rewarding. They're so creative.
So I want to get into this, discuss the stereotypes about teens and social media. Yeah. What do you say to people who prefer a simpler way and don't understand the impact of social media in this new era?
I say it works, full stop, period. I think that social media can be daunting for anyone who's unfamiliar with the platforms. And I think teenagers get a really bad rep of just being these, like, zombies glued to their phones, consuming mindless content. But teenagers are really, really smart. And they are really, really consuming content and absorbing it in a way that's super thoughtful. They want to be creators. They want to be influential in their communities. And for a lot of them, the first step for that is social media. And for our work at Project Unloaded, social media is us meeting these teens exactly where they are, right? The research Stay Inside that was showed on the screen shows that lots of teens, through our research, they don't go outside as often as they maybe once did in the past. You know, they're hearing messages from their parents, their community, in one way or another, that it's safer for them to be in the house. And when they are spending all that time in their homes, they're scrolling, they're digesting this information, like I said. It's a much, much, much more powerful tool than a lot of people give it credit for. And we've seen that it works, right? It's not just these anecdotal stories where we know students like Leah who are super involved and want to be a part of the change. We see in our programs that as students go through the curriculum learning, you know, ways to inspire their peers to have conversations and engage in the facts, they are shifting away from the thought that they need a gun to be safe, 15 to 20% of them, in fact. So we know that it works. We know that social media is powerful. And I think that we should all be using it to kind of meet teens in this productive way so we can all be a part of this ecosystem working towards change.
Thank you. Yeah. Dr. Rogers, according to Project Unloaded, over half of Chicago's mass shootings involve victims under 20 years old. As a trauma surgeon on the south side of Chicago, you have witnessed firsthand the consequences of firearms, not only on the patients, but also on the families. How have these experiences changed you and your perception of guns?
Well, you know, I think that there is a narrative that is often written in popular media or within our collective consciousness that people who got shot somehow deserved it, right? There's this narrative that, okay, what were they doing? What time of day did it happen? Where were they? But then when you see the reality of what that means, right, it's a 16-year-old getting off a bus. It's a 17-year-old walking in the park. It's a 18-year-old riding their bike around Washington Park, which is across the street from the University of Chicago. Well, how can you ascribe responsibility for doing those activities? That's what kids do. And as Nina alluded to, the U.S. Census Bureau says a teen is someone less than 21. My sons are 28, 25, and 22. They're still boys to me, not in a pejorative sense, but they're still young people. And over 65% of the people who come to the trauma center at the University of Chicago are 28 and lower. And at the Comer Children's Hospital, our pediatric trauma center, 20%, 1 in 5, that's kids 16 and under, are shot. That's why they come to the trauma center. And the devastating toll that does to clinicians, nurses, emergency medicine, anesthesiologists, trauma surgeons, is that we see that could be our kid. That could be us. And I think if we had more of that framework, this could be us. Maybe we would do something more dramatic, like Project Unloaded is trying to do, to change the narrative.
And Dr. Rogers, at this point in your career, do you believe social media creates an opportunity among the young to address America's gun violence epidemic?
So I'm gonna put myself on a limb and say, you know, I'm 58. I'm not a social media wonk by any stretch. I actually didn't know what IG stood for. Until I was asked to be interviewed about what a trauma surgeon does by one of the youth council members, like Layla, for a piece on Instagram, IG. I didn't have an account. I didn't know how to create an account. I was pretty stupid, or more politically correct, not knowledgeable. And a 14-year-old schooled me on what IG was. They schooled me on the process of doing one of these interviews. And I walked away astounded at how creative the content that she created just by asking me questions. And that lives on in the IG world in a way that I actually never stopped to think would be true. And as I mentioned, I have 3 sons. The first time one of my kids told me that they wrote a term paper on their iPhone, I said, what's the computer for? And then they followed it up by, I get all my news from TikTok. And I said, and you are college educated? Are you serious? But the problem is, that is the generation that we live in, right? We are not them. They are them. They are living their best life. And in that context, that just-in-time, almost media entertainment world is where they absorb information. The knowledge gets dropped and gets picked up. So shame on us if we don't embrace that reality, that that's the way lots of knowledge is being gained.
Thank you. Jadine, as the district's chief of safety and security, you oversee the safety operations for more than 380 students in over 640 schools. Obviously, social media now plays a significant role in how students communicate. How have you prioritized solutions to gun violence?
So social media is like good. But then there's also another side of social media. You probably have seen nationally, there's just a lot been going on with threats that are made on social media. These are all things that we deal with every single day. My team and I, we feel, you know, after a violent incident somewhere else in the country, we'll see anywhere from 3 to 5 of these a day. And so one of the things that we try to do, which is really similar to what Project Unloaded seeks to do, is how do we embrace our young people as part of the solution? And so me sitting up here, I'm a little older than you, just a little. And nobody ever asked me, what do I think? And so it was other people, adults, deciding how we were going to find solutions. One of the things we've learned at Chicago Public Schools through partnerships like this is the best solutions always come from our young people. And so I'm so grateful that, you know, our friends from COCO and Diet and the Alternative Schools Network are here because these are the young people who we need to speak with to find the answer. I've never been let down when we are talking with our young people. Here's our problem. How do y'all think we should solve it? So that's the approach that we take. Our whole school safety policy, which is a new policy we just launched last summer, is all about student voice. How do we bring students to the table? So if it's social media, if it's cell phone policy, whatever it is, we're involving our young people in deciding how we're going to move forward. And that's what I've found to be our most successful approach.
And can you tell us about the Choose to Change program?
Yeah, so part of that is involving our Choose to Change program. I think Nina mentioned it. Choose to Change program is a mentoring life skills program that's run by a group called Youth Advocate Program in partnership with another organization called Brightpoint. I'm real proud. Just a week ago, we just put out a new press release. University of Chicago Crime Lab shows the results from the Choose to Change program after 2 years show at least a 39% reduction in the likelihood that a young person is going to be arrested for a violent crime. But what's really exciting that we showed last week in the report was that sustains up to 3 years after they finish the program. So I'm told these are remarkable results that even after you're in the program and finished, that the results continue. What's exciting about Choose to Change is we brought these young people to the table with Project Unloaded as part of these experiences. Again, the idea that you're bringing together those who are most affected by it as voices towards the solution. And so when we were recruiting our young people for the first summer of Project Unloaded, we went to Choose to Change and we asked our young people to raise their hands. Who wants to be a part of this? And that's who we selected for that first round.
That's great. Thank you. Leah, you were part of the Project Unloaded with After School Matters. What would you say is the biggest thing that you took away?
Honestly, I took away that, like, I think that there's a lot of kids in Chicago who do want to make a change, but they just have to be given the space. So I took that away, that I just feel like they just need an outlet, you know, and the resources to make that change that they want to see. So, yeah.
And then there were students from all parts of Chicago. What would you say you learned from them?
I don't know. I feel like maybe just like everyone has different stories. You know, not everyone comes from the same place. Not everyone's, you know, is going to have the same experiences, and experiences shape who you are. So I think that, you know, every different people coming into one space, you know, that's really helpful because everyone has a different perspective. So I just thought that was just amazing.
Did it give you a different perspective on how to use social media now?
100%. Like, I think it's just like your For You page and all these different aspects. Like, it definitely, like, it can be very helpful, you know, not just detrimental and dangerous. It can be a great space and outlet and that kind of stuff.
Because I know we've all been guilty of scrolling. We all do it. Olivia, I want to go to you. In your experience, how do you believe changing the narrative plays a role in reducing gun violence?
I think when I think about any social issue throughout history, there is a piece of that that is kind of standardized through policy, and there's a piece of that that's standardized through life and through culture. So when I think about changing gun culture, changing a narrative, I think that it's so crucial to preventing gun violence down the line. You know, we just saw all of these statistics that young people, not adults, not anyone else, young people more than ever believe that guns make them safer, even though we know through research and everything else that they don't. So where are they learning that? How are they engaging with that? That's culture, right? Leah just said, you know, you're your experience. You're the places that you go. You're the music you listen to. You are all of these things. And I think if we are able to utilize them in a productive way to kind of implant our own messages throughout history and kind of disrupt what has been, that's going to be super beneficial and super important for reducing gun violence, not just changing the culture.
And your passion for advocacy also came at a very young age.
Absolutely.
Had also mentioned you were a teenager yourself.
Absolutely.
Can you share your... I'm not a teenager anymore, guys. Half of us are not. We're young in the inside. Can you share your vision for leading programs and curriculums involving young people learning about social media and marketing? How was that journey like?
Yeah, I've been an organizer since I was 14 years old. I'm from Miami, Florida originally. And when I was an organizer, you know, there were a lot of things that I cared about just because
they were impacting me personally, right? So I was organizing around underage drug usage, climate change, arts as activism. All of those things were super important to me. And I think it's really important to get creative. And as I go through this journey of teaching these young people about how to use social media for social change and becoming influencers in their community on social media and just in real life, I'm thinking about what is interesting, what's new, what's fresh, you know? The good thing about social media is that you are exposed to so much information, but it's a double-edged sword because you're exposed to so much information. Nothing feels, you know, particularly new anymore. So I'm always looking for new ways to innovate. I'm always looking for new ways to make our programs stronger. A lot of that comes from learning from the teens themselves. Like, I am not a teenager anymore. But they know so much that's so different from when I was a teen. So going to Jadeen's point, like putting teens first and letting them lead you is super important to my process. It's super important to innovate and introduce our teens to new things. One of my biggest joys in the program is bringing speakers like Dr. Rogers and our professional marketing mentors into the program so teens can just know that these people exist and they trust them and they want to hear from them, they want to learn from them. I think that's been the best part. And I think in addition to everything that I've said, exposing them to these new experiences and opportunities is something that's going to be beneficial for reducing gun violence, changing gun culture, and all of the goals that we have in our program, but also for improving their life and opening up their worldview.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And Dr. Rogers, why has it been important to you to join Project Unloaded? You've also spoken to students at Chicago Public Schools. You know, what's your message to them?
Before I say that, I want to make a public service announcement. So Leah is up here on the stage as a high school student. Historically, if you sample this room, the greatest fear that many people will have in common is the fear of public speaking. I lift you up.
You're doing great.
So back to the question. Well, you know, I first met Nina, the executive director of Project Unloaded, shortly after I arrived in Chicago 7 years ago. And at the time, she was in the Joyce Foundation and doing great works there. And as she branched off and thought about tackling the problem of ending gun violence in a different way by going young, if you will, going to the youth, it struck me as an innovative approach, right? I mean, I think one of the problems that we have is it's easy to, if you will, focus on the Second Amendment. Well, in this polarized society, okay, another comment, Leila. If you can have a chance to speak to all the presidential candidates, I think you would make them change their minds about a lot of things. But where we want to go, we can't make progress if we can't talk. Mm. And so if the conversation ends because you say we need to repeal all guns, or conversation ends because someone says I want to keep all my guns, then the conversation ends. Mm. And at least I view Project Unloaded as an approach that goes beyond that. It's a novel way to think about the problem, to tackle cultural norms. We all have cultural norms about things that are acceptable or not acceptable. It used to be homosexuality or gay marriage was not acceptable as a society. Now that's a norm. And that's a good thing. It used to be women didn't have the right to vote, which is bizarre to me since half the population has always been women. But that's not a norm. So I think the issue of guns in particular, as a trauma surgeon, I don't actually ever ask someone why they are carrying a gun. I never ask them why they got shot. That's not my business. And I haven't walked their walk. But I do ask them, how can I help? And one of the things that people say is, I don't feel safe. And this happens before they get shot. And it happens even more intensely after they get shot. And the belief that people have is that having a gun will make them feel safer. when we know empirically that is not true. So Project Unloaded is attempting to get to the people who are the most influenceable, the young, around this thesis that ownership of a gun is going to make you feel safer. And that's true for the young. That's true for the elderly who's mildly demented with cognitive decline. That's true for a domestic violence situation. It's true for all of us. It's not true just for a segment of our population. And unfortunately, the counter narrative is so powerful that people believe it to be true, partly driven by the narratives populated by the media in general around this. Every time you hear someone shot someone who's breaking into their house, how many times does it actually happen? Actually, it's a minority of the time compared to how many times someone took a gun and took their own life or tried to take their own life or someone used a gun illegally to do harm to another person. So the statistics do not support what people believe to be true.
And Dr. Rogers, you mentioned that you have three boys. You know, you're a trauma surgeon. What has it been like for you? How do you mentally cope with these cases that come through the hospital?
You know, Dr. Douglas, one of my residents is in the room, and I talk about this a fair bit very transparently. There are some days where it's really, really, really hard. I, as many nurses, as physiologists, emergency medicine physicians, we take what we do really seriously, right? We take it, if you will, personally, but not personally to the point that we break down in a sniveling ball of sobbing tears every time something bad happens to somebody else. But there are these moments, at least for me as a Black man with three Black sons, where I look on the trauma bay and I see my child, right? I see that that could be my 28-year-old, my 25-year-old, my 22-year-old. And that informs me in two ways: how I approach that person and their close contacts that I have to interface with as a human, fellow human to another human. But it also informs me to come back the next day because I don't want it to happen to anybody. And so how can we do the collective thing, be all in, like Margaret Mead said, never doubt that committed people working together can change the world. It's the only thing that ever has. But we need more of that coming together. And we currently are at that impasse around this really big public health problem that's taking 50,000 lives a year in the United States of America.
Thank you, Jadine. Similar question to you. What is it like for you as well and your staff when you know a young teen shot up outside of a school or in a different neighborhood? You know, what is that like for you as well, personally?
I mean, similarly, and I can't think too hard about it, or sort of like you, we couldn't go to this dark place. It's traumatic. And I don't think people really understand, you know, that we're dealing with a child. And so when there is a victim who is a child, it takes it to a whole different level. And one of the things that I want people to take away from this conversation is we've really got to prioritize our young people. And what I mean by that is really believing in them and not making assumptions. I hear the same thing. Whenever we have a student who is a victim, and it doesn't happen usually at the school. It happens in the community, after hours, whatever. People immediately go, well, what were they doing out of that hour? So we have that same issue. And I want people to understand, please recognize a person. We're talking about a child here. And so what we try to do is really value that child, value all of our young people, and believe them and listen to them. And I just want everyone in this room to walk away from this conversation. They know more than us. And I mean that so respectfully. As somebody who is, again, up there, I was a teenager once, but now I'm like way up here now. And if I've learned anything in my life is that our young people are our future. And so everything we do is centering their voices and their experiences. Don't make assumptions. And by all means, listen to them. And I have to say this, any principals in the room? Okay, good. I have to tell the principals all the time who I love dearly, listen to your students. And then people are like, well, I know better. You don't know better. Trust me. And so I think that that's what I would ask out of this, is just make sure that we're continuing to center their voices in the solution and make sure that we're acknowledging their human experience. Don't make assumptions about the young people. Then you read them on the news, you'll be making a big mistake.
I'm going to jump in and say, so this story, so, you know, my kids are 28, 25, and 22, as I said. What year are you at 5 years old? Kindergarten?
About four or five.
Depending on your birthday?
Yeah.
Kindergarten. So help me to understand, last night, a five-year-old was shot in the back. Last night, on the South Side. Whose fault is that? The five-year-old's? What we don't then ask is what happens next to the kid. Who's alive, by the way? But what happens next? What happens when they're seven? What happens in school? Are they learning well? Are they having nightmares? All of that stuff matters, because then that's the trajectory for the rest of that kid's life, from that seminal event of a bullet going through their back. What do we do as a society about that?
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah,
so
go ahead.
When we ask young people, what makes you feel safe at school, number one, hands down, like 80 to 95%, the answer is relationships. I want a trusted relationship with an adult, either at my school and or at my home life. And so that's what we all need to do, is wrap our arms around our young people. You know, the five-year-old, I can't comment on that right now. But we need to make sure that every single one of our children in the city have that support from either a member of their family and or someone at a school. That's actually in our policy, too, by the way. All right. And our policy says, looking at Lori, our policy says that every CPS student must have at least a relationship with a trusted adult in their school. That's a mandate. That's a policy. And it's not a fake relationship. It's one where we welcome you arms wide open, and we're going to make sure that you have what you need, at least someone to go to. So I just wanted to add that in.
Thank you.
No, thank you. I'm going to start with audience questions. So if anyone has any questions on their blue card, just raise it up and someone will come pick it up. Like, that's the easy way. There you go. Okay, so the first question from an audience member is, Olivia, to you. How can we help teens develop critical thinking skills to navigate social media content related to gun violence, ensuring they're informed and not influenced by harmful messages? Oh, I'm sorry. Oopsie.
That's an amazing question. I'll get started while we I think we need to ask critical questions of them, right? If you want to build that muscle, we need to give them materials that are robust enough to get them thinking about how they differentiate between good, meaningful content that's advancing their life and content that's not productive for them or their community. One of the things that we recently did in our After School Matters program this fall, we kind of did an article search talking about defensive gun use, and then our students were then tasked with creating a short 15-second video sharing back, you know, in their own voice, how they would relay this information back to their peers. I believe in these students, right? They can do hard things if you give them the opportunity to do it. And I think that when I'm building curriculum and when we're in the classroom, I am always thinking of ways to build their media literacy, build their critical thinking about this issue, but also make them know or make them understand and empower them to feel like they can go out and do something. And that starts with not being afraid of asking them hard questions, because they do have an answer for it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. The next question here is, how can community organizations that aren't necessarily focused on violence prevention, but seek out school partners because they are in high violent areas, do to be in a more active part of the violence reduction and prevention ecosystem?
I'll take that one. Chicago Public Schools has a reputation of being bureaucratic and difficult to work with. You might have heard that. We actually have arms wide open opportunities if you want to be a volunteer organization to partner with us. It's very important. Chicago Public Schools cannot do this alone. We need partners in the medical community, in our universities, and our CBOs. And so if there is an organization that you are aware of in this room or outside of this room, please encourage them to come forward. They would email me. They can email Tony Copeland on my team, and we will connect you to the right place. A lot of people think, well, I'll just like walk up to my neighborhood school and knock on the door and speak with the principal. That's okay, except that principals are really busy, and so if you don't have an appointment, they might not be able to talk to you at that moment. And so there's just other entrees that to get inside that might be a little bit easier. And so I guess that's a long way of saying, please come forward.
Great. Then from the Project The Loaded side of the house, one thing I'd want to add to that, we love partnering with orgs that may have a violence prevention angle, but also may not. You know, one of the biggest things that we say when we connect with our partners is that we just want to work with organizations who have built trust in the communities that we want to be working in and with the teens who are seeing our ads. And some of that is working with violence prevention orgs. Some of that's just working with orgs who love kids and love the arts and using arts to educate youth. So I think if you are a leader at an organization in this room and you're thinking about how might you work with Project Unloaded and you maybe are coming up short, come find me afterwards, because I always have ideas about who and how we work and what we can do. I wanted to add that.
You are also very easy to talk to. She's very patient. This is to Leah. Despite the gun violence occurring today and lack of institutional action, what still gives you hope?
I think the future gives me hope. Like, there's always another day. Well, hopefully, because I get to live another day. And I think that gives me hope, as well as seeing that I was placed, I guess, in a good position that I have not gotten shot. You know, I have not, like, I'm fully functional, I like to think. And I just feel like that if I was, you know, given these cards, that, you know, I have an opportunity to make a difference, then I would want to, you know, use everything I have to try to make that difference.
Thank you. This next question is, with the government knowing the data on gun violence, why are there not any monitoring in place? Why are they not monitoring in place, and parents aren't, why aren't they being held accountable for kids, social media, and young teen shootings? If that makes sense. Maybe you, Jadeen?
I mean, is the question, I think, how can we hold parents more accountable?
Parental accountability?
Yes, why are they not held accountable for kids' social media's actions on teen shootings?
I think it's an interesting question. I think we've seen around the country where other, you know, maybe not social media directly, where they're trying to hold parents accountable for situations. It's complex. And I know, like, in Chicago, we see parents as our partners. And so as part of the solution, in our view, it doesn't help to punish the parents. At the same time, some people are trying to punish the kids. Punishment is not, in our view, the answer. And so what we're trying to do instead is look at solutions that get to the root of the issue, which sounds like a cliche to some, but it's really true. If we merely, I had a conversation with someone about it, like, why aren't we arresting parents who don't send their children to school, children who are truant? Well, how's that going to help? How is that going to help if I'm now, like, arresting the parent? That's not going to help the child now come to school if the other barriers are something else. And so I think that it's an interesting question and I think worth conversation, but I think it's a part of the solution set, which is, where do you want to go? What are we trying to solve? And then what's the best way to solve that?
Thank you. And I think we have time only for one more question. Okay. This question is, what is the role of the growing community violence intervention work? Is CPS reconsidering getting those with background into schools as modern mentoring?
And so I receive this question every panel I speak at. Yeah. It's a fair question. The answer is, there's actually a state law that we lean on that governs how we vet adults who are coming into our schools to work with children. It's something that I've spoken about with many state legislatures about, is there a way to carve out certain roles, such as mentors or such as outreach workers? Is a way to carve it out in a way that, you know, maybe at least pilot it, where we can bring some people in. We haven't got any takers yet from our government partners. I mean, to just give you an example to the extreme, like, local school council parents have to be fingerprinted. That's a state law. I'm just saying. And so I think that if we're talking about sort of being progressive around opening that up, I think it's going to take a wider conversation so that everyone's on the same page.
Dr. Rogers, do you have any last thoughts?
I was actually going to make a comment that's specifically about background checks of people in high schools, because we had a similar challenge in the healthcare space. And we just change the rule. I'm not saying that for underage kids that rule should be changed, but I do think, back to the comment about trusted relationships, highly vetted, trusted relationships with people who have a PhD in life could be incredibly impactful for certain kids who go, you don't understand me, you don't connect with me, you don't walk my walk. And you know, I may externally look black, I am, but I am not from Chicago. I have not had the lived experience of a whole host of the patients I take care of, but I come with an incredible, intense humility that I don't know, and I seek to partner with them to get them over their clinical needs, at least in the context of meeting them on a trauma bay. I think that's part of the trusted relationship piece, but what happens when they leave the trauma bay or they go back to their community, I think that's another piece where something like Project Unloaded for the peer-peer piece can go a long way around this issue of changing norms. And I think that that is one of the arenas that we have to explore more deeply.
Thank you. Well, round of applause to the panelists, Olivia Brown, Leia McCain, J.D. Chow, and Dr. Selwyn Rogers. Thank you.
I want to thank all our panelists. Joanna, thank you for moderating. There's a lot of food for thought to think about. I'm going to challenge one last thing before you go about your day to understand each other better. Introduce yourself to someone you don't know. Maybe you sat with them during lunch. Maybe they're the table in the back or table in the front, but get to know your neighbor. And thank you all for attending. Thank you again, panelists and Joanna, and have a great day. Bye.